It's Magnum Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Snell, and I'm joined, as always, by these two crazy cats who kept blowing in on the Kona winds. It's David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels.
You know, there's something hypnotic about the podcast in Hawaii.
Tropical hey! Madness, Nona.
Hey, we're having a hurricane party.
The Kona winds came blowing in.
Mm. We're having a heat wave.
Do you guys feel that?
Wait, no.
It almost feels as if the air's alive. The Kona winds. Season 6, episode 4. The Kona winds. They're blowing it. The Kona winds. What happens in Hawaii, you see, normally they're the trade winds, and the windward get the rain, and the leeward sides of the island don't get much rain. But sometimes there are storms that are just north of Hawaii, and it causes the winds to shift, and they blow from the south. And so the normally dry parts of the island get a lot of rain, and it's very unusual. And also, apparently, it clouds men's minds and makes them do strange things. The Kona winds.
Is this our new meteorology segment?
I just wanted to explain what the Kona winds are that they are a logical phenomenon that does not cloud men's minds. And yet, in this episode, everything is explained. Why did this character do this unreasonable thing? The Kona winds.
It happens.
Mercury was in retrograde. It's like the Santa Ana winds in Los Angeles, where it's very hot and windy, and everyone is cranky.
Except in this it's rainy, and there's the threat of a hurricane that is also.
And Rick throws a hurricane party.
Mm-hmm,
I was so happy.
Do they serve hurricanes at the hurricane party? No, it's a luau.
It's a luau. No, I was so happy before I went and checked magnumania.com. The Bible of Magnum Podcast. Mm-hmm. I was watching this and I'm thinking, Chris Abbott read Red Wind by Raymond Chandler before she wrote this. Because the plot has certain similarities. It's echoes of it. It's film noir-ish. It's not very good, but
I talk about this the thing. A lot, that Magnum is the brightest, Hawaii noir, right? That there is always this love of film noir conventions for the detective, and we see it come back again and again. And this episode, I would say, is the most straight up film noir episode of Magnum that I've seen. There is a femme fatale. There is a twisty plot. There is a fallacy of the talking killer. There is a lot of stuff that goes on in here that is, I mean, because it's unlike our last episode that we did, Tropical Madness, which has a similar plot. There's also sort of a femme fatale, but she's not very fatal. It's all for fun. Here, it's not for fun. It's very serious.
Not fun at all.
And I mean, Red Wind literally begins, speaking of the Santa Ana winds, there was a desert wind blowing that night. It was one of those hot, dry Santa Anas that comes down through the mountain passes and curl your hair and makes your nerves jump and your skin itch.
And this episode is all about how it's so every weird day until the Kona winds come. They stir the blood and the emotions as we were all part of the drama. That's what Magnum says at the beginning of this episode, which is followed immediately by, and I mean, it is very noirish. I didn't love this episode. I think that this episode is not very good, but what I appreciate about it is that it is really committed to the noir elements, and in that there's some cool stuff. So like a mysterious woman appears on the lava near where Thomas is just looking out at the wild ocean. And
well, because Thomas is drawn to the wild ocean when the winds start blowing, because
he wants to be part of the drama of the Kona winds. That's why he's there. And so she's out there, and you're like, oh, is she thinking of killing herself? And she jumps into the wild ocean, so we must follow, which means I need to reintroduce our segment introduced in a previous episode, which is, what is Thomas Magnum wearing? Nothing. Because, of course, he immediately, it doesn't take him, it's very easy for him to do. He's accustomed to doing it. He takes his shirt off. He dives in the water. There are lots of stock photography shots of very rough oceans at the Hawaiian coast, interspersed with very brief shots from very far away of two figures in the water, a man and a woman. And then late in this sequence, a shot of Tom Selleck where they're a little closer into shore, which, I mean, it's like dangerous water. You wouldn't want to drown your actors, but it is. There's a lot of stock photography of just waves
and And the film grain doesn't always match. It's a little little noticeable.
No. They probably blew up some of the stuff. Anyway, he does save her, and she says, "My husband's going to kill me." It's the wind. And she says, his business partner Charlie was yelling at my husband, and he shot him. He killed him.
And he knows that I know,
and he's going to kill me. I mean, noir setup, and you're sitting there thinking, well, okay, but like, she's got to be telling the truth, because how would she even know that Magnum's out there on the rocks? And wait for it. But I like that revelation is delayed until later in the episode, right, so that you have to sort of be questioning, like, well, is she or isn't she?
Well, except the problem with that is, if you like noir and if you like this kind of thing, the minute she threw herself into the drink, I'm all, oh yes, I too have seen Vertigo, so I know where is going.
Oh no,
this is Vertigo without the Vertigo.
I mean, it's very clear what she's doing here, but what I like about it is that they hold that card back, and so they don't, like, it's just enough to be like, well, actually, I mean, the truth is, because it's Magnum, I'm partially thinking, are they just not going to explain that there's a terrible coincidence there? But they do, and so I give them the credit that they do finally moment
at the
club.
After complaining in tropical madness.
Tropical madness, yes.
That everything was very hasty. Here they actually take time to lay down the little breadcrumbs that when you look back on the plot, you could say, they just leave out all of the fun of Tropic Madness.
Yeah, that's...
And instead, it is a dreary slog.
Well, you know, a good film noir, and I mean, you guys know more about it than I do, but I've seen enough of them to know that, like, a good film noir, they're still kind of full of awful people and kind of unpleasant, but it's the point of it. And like the tone, like it's like a bitter chocolate or something. I feel like good noir has this element to it, but it can be really good. But a bad noir has all of those elements. It's like a burned chocolate, right? It's like, it's got all those elements and it's not fun. Yeah. And unfortunately, the Kona Winds is not a good noir, but it does have all the elements that I appreciate. Like they put a lot of work into this script. It puts a lot of work into all of that, but I think it just doesn't work in the end, but it's all there.
I mean, a good noir, it's like one of my favorite lines of Raymond Chandler, down these mean streets, a man must go who is not himself mean, right? The hero is going to be the one good person who looks around and goes, wow, everyone else is evil, right?
And I'm just slightly morally compromised, but not evil.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you sort of have that with Magnum. But this is also just not a good noir.
No. But it's noir by numbers. It does. Yeah. I was impressed that it's, because Magnum,
it's not awful.
Magnum does noir elements a lot, but this one is like just entirely a noir story, right?
And the best times when Magnum does play with this, it's like Tropical Madness, where they undercut, they sort of mock the conventions of noir, and this one just does it straight. And as I was watching it, I don't remember seeing this in the 80s, so I might have missed it entirely. But as I was watching it this time, I kept thinking, Thomas, you watch film noir.
Yeah, I know.
You know these things.
When you're in it.
What are you doing?
When you're in
but
it.
But it's the
That would have been another way to go, right? But this episode doesn't want to undercut the noir. It really, really, really wants to be a film noir. Because the Magnum way to do it would probably be to have him say, I know what you're thinking. She shows up like that and I save her. It's got to be a setup. But I don't think it is a setup, right? And have him be questioning it.
Like, play with that.
But they don't do that. So there's a hurricane coming and Higgins is freaking out. Magnum has to reveal that he found this woman who was trying to kill herself, basically, and he brought her in because she's upset and thinks her husband might be killing her and all of that. And Higgins does not yell at him, but instead says, well, then you got to fix the generator because we're all going to need it and get the pumps and all of that. So, like, not a moment to spare. But Magnum looks out the window and she's driven away. She's gone. Another element in this episode that I enjoyed, and I think you guys probably enjoyed too, is that the radios are tuned to the exposition station throughout.
Yes. Oh, yes.
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 A plane carrying the Harlem Globetrotters has gone down near Gilligan's Island. Yeah. Look out, everyone.
Yeah, there's radio exposition is on 24/7, telling you exactly what you need to know to move the plot along. The license plate of the car is owned by Sam Henderson, who owns hotels all over Hawaii. His wife's name is Lauren, so Lauren Henderson is obviously who the femme fatale is. Magnum sneaks in like he does. Since season two, I guess he's just decided not even to have a voiceover, how he doesn't really want to break the law. But there she is, and she says, "You found me." It's our femme fatale is Cynthia Sykes, who you could very easily mistake for Robin Curtis. She is an actress with a certain look about her. She's very 80s soap opera actress looking, although I don't think she was on any daytime soap operas.
I only remember her from St. Elsewhere.
Yeah.
And she wasn't even like one of the prominent, like we remember them because of St. Elsewhere characters. No.
She's fine in this. They immediately go to kissing, which is even more of the femme fatale kind of thing. Like, it's like, whoa, lady. And Magnum's like, no, we need to go to the police, because he's playing, and this is the pivot of the episode, right, is he's playing the patsy, and I think he is the patsy, and then he wises up and realizes that what's going on, and then she assumes he's going to still be the patsy, and he's not anymore, right? That's the progression here. So they break into her husband's office. His combination lock combo is the date of their wedding, which is on the picture in front of the lock. Very bad security, everybody. Don't use birthdays as your passwords. They leave the safe open as they escape because the security guard is coming. Well, that's no good, because that's going to be a dead giveaway to your security guard that somebody has broken in. But they do escape the guard very easily and go back to her house. And he says, oh, no, we're going to go back to her house. I know what this means.
I did actually like this, where he opens the door and gets her in the Ferrari, which actually has its roof for once.
It does, because it's raining, because the Kona winds, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as he walks her in the car, it's not even a narration. It's just him talking to himself. It's like, do you realize what you're doing, you idiot?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, that's a nice touch.
But you know why he does it?
The Kona
winds!
The Kona winds.
Now that too.
The Kona winds! Almost feels like the air is alive.
It's actually tropical madness.
Mm. So now they're in bed together. He seems troubled despite the fact that they've had sex and he's in bed with her. The husband returns.
Yeah, he doesn't look all that
he
into
it. He does not. No, he doesn't. The husband returns and they're like, I'm Mr. Magnum. I'm here to investigate security in the neighborhood. And the husband is like, well, I have a very good security system, which I'm sure you've checked out. And then I also have a backup, which is this gun. Got it, Magnum?
Yeah. It'd be a shame if keep in this drawer.
Yeah, exactly. And the Magnum's
look,
like, yep.
Look.
It is not subtle, sir, you were saying.
You know why it's not subtle, Phil? The Kona winds!
Kona winds! Normally, I keep this gun in a totally different drawer, but it's crazy
it's
time.
The Kona winds. Anyway, Magnum goes back to the estate. He fixes the generator. He's got a nice piece of, like, a little thing of grease on his face. And
well,
he
that's
gets
how
the generator
you know he's been working.
He has been. He's like, yeah, I got it. Because Higgins, really nagging him, was like, well, you know, Magnum, you can get a handyman out here if you can't fix the generator. And it's like, and then 20 minutes later in the episode, Magnum's fixing the generator himself because he's not going to get a handyman out there to do it. The winds, they affect us all. The winds. Magnum now does his detective thing. He fast talks a secretary into seeing the insurance policy for the hotel chain in a funny scene where she talks and talks and talks, and the whole idea there is you just let them talk. Oh, we have the inspection, and Charlie always meets with them, and then we had a break-in, and all these things. And Magnum's like, interesting, and she hands all these documents to him. And then he leaves, but he has a close call on the escalator where the husband is coming up the escalator to his office, so Magnum has to turn around, run up the down escalator, kind of hide in a corner. corner as he goes by.
Grab some newspapers. And my thought when this was happening was, if they made this today, he would have no newspapers to grab.
I know.
So in 21st century, Magnum P.I. busted Magnum.
No, he's just looking at his phone. He's off in the corner looking at his phone. Yeah. They can't. Mm-hmm. They won't notice him.
Unless he's holding, he can hold the newspapers up in front of himself. Unless he's got like a Galaxy Fold that he's unfolded. He can't hide his face behind that.
Well, his back is to him though. Also, in 21st century Magnum, there are cameras in the office and they know who did the break-in.
That's also true because the security panopticon has taken hold.
Exactly right. I mean, and they'll do face recognition and they'll know that it's Thomas Magnum and he'll be put away in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So Magnum...
This sounds like modern Magnum. Stop it.
Magnum is troubled by what he's learning here, because it doesn't all add up about Sam, the husband, concocting a scheme. If Charlie, who is supposedly the dead guy, is always meeting with the inspectors, and he's troubled by this as he goes back, and Rick is holding a hurricane party that is from his friend, Good Time Charlie, or whatever his name is.
Big Ed Kamakoa.
Big Ed Kamakoa.
King of the Luau's.
King of the Luau's. So they're doing a luau, and he's like, I gotta go in the back and do some stuff. And Rick's like, oh, you're a party crasher, but it's like, there's no time for that, Rick. We gotta do this. So he calls
Ed knows him. Ed is like, hey, Magnum.
Because he's done some work for him back in the day.
It's flavor. They blow through it really quick because they gotta get to the plot. But that's a good bit of Hawaiian flavor and also of like Rick character dynamic flavor.
He provides the next pivot too.
Mm-hmm. So Magnum is calling all the hotels and he's looking for Charlie. And he gets Charlie on the phone, Charlie who's supposed to be dead. Mm-hmm. And to prove it, he says, sir, could you tell me your social security number over the phone, please?
My wife was watching this episode with me, and Jason, just as you admonish the poor password practices, my social security number to you, strange sir, calling me on the phone. It's 1234567, of course.
Yeah, very clearly, it is this is what happens. The biggest security holes of all are the people who get talked into doing, it's
Magnum really did some fast talk in there to get them by just saying, give me your social security
and
number.
I'll mail you a check for the check will be in the mail tomorrow.
Okay.
I mean, clearly they cut a scene where TC pulls a Nigerian prince scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
So the guy, the luau guy, comes into the back and says, "Hey, Magnum, Sam Henderson's wife, she was looking for a private eye about a week ago, and I pointed her in your direction." It's like, and there's the shoe dropping, which is, this has all been a setup. She was looking at Magnum the whole time. This was the whole plan. So then she calls and says, "Magnum, I found Charlie's body. Oh, and you better bring your gun." And obviously the wheels are spinning, and he's like, well, this is a setup. And he gets there. Okay, cut two, he gets there. Now, here's the interesting thing that we'll learn is Magnum is not as dumb as he seems, and he has worked out what's going on, and he's laid plans, but we don't get to see them. So he shows up, she's unloading the safe.
Yeah, we don't know that he's even there until she comes down from the safe.
That's right. And he says, "You lied to me about Charlie." And she says, "Well, the truth was too complicated. Look, $250,000. And he, again, showing good detective skills, Magnum lets her talk. Fallacy of the talking killer. She tells the whole story about what she's doing. And then the husband shows up. And the husband's like, "Oh, Mr. Magnum." And I love how he says Mr. Magnum all the time. It's like, you're such a piece of garbage, Mr. Magnum.
I saw you reading those newspapers.
Yeah. Upside down. That's how I knew it was you, Mr. Magnum, because I know you can't read. You're just one of those beach folk.
Beach bums.
Yeah. Yes. So he insults Magnum, and he says, you don't have the killer instinct. The Beach Boys, Brian Wilson and Mike Love, no, that's not what he means, don't have it. He doesn't have it in him. And Magnum shoots him. And, of course, as we know, this has totally got to be legit, because in Magnum P.I., if you shoot a person one time, they instantly die. That's what happens.
That's right.
On TV. And at this point, the mask comes off, and she's like, all right, you know, I'm going to tell a story about a second rate. She insults him as a private investigator multiple times in this. Really unnecessary. A second rate PI who is going to be killed in a shootout with the husband. And
well, because he's the money thrown in down the his gun.
Yeah.
And she goes, and in the background, we watch her go and get the gun. And it's all staged so that we think, oh, this is real. Oh, no.
Yeah, Magnum. She's got Magnum, and she's gonna shoot him, say it was her husband, say that they were killed in the shootout, and then she and her boyfriend, I guess, who is Charlie, who's off wherever, are going to get to live it up.
Yeah.
They're going to live it up. And own the hotels and everything. So she doesn't even need the money at that point. They'll have everything. And this has all been, and Magnum is a sucker. And she shoots Magnum, except the gun just clicks and there's no shots. And he's like, haha, I emptied it before you came downstairs. Also, your husband is not dead, and he gets up.
Well, she's like, no one will believe you.
And he stands up and goes,
I will.
I will, because he's not dead. It's all a setup, and we got you, lady. You're going to the big house. You're going to the Gray Bar Hotel, and that is the big twist in the episode.
Now, I don't want to disparage our good friends at Magnum-Mania.com,
the official Bible of Magnum
Podcast.
Well,
now I disparage them by leaving out the dash. In the notes for this episode, they say, this episode showcases elements of film noir, true, and features one of the best twist endings ever seen in the show.
Well, ever seen in the show, Phil? Ever seen in the show?
No, because the best twist ending is when Magnum kills a man in cold blood.
Yeah, this you're right.
Fake
yeah.
killing a man in cold blood.
You're
that
right.
was truly a shocking
you're right.
twist ending.
You're right.
Here again, I say, if you have seen any sort of film noir over the years, you know where this is going.
You know where this is going. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. But it is a fun moment. And I did have that moment where I'm like, oh, Magnum killed the guy. But like, Magnum, you know, this is a, oh yes. Okay.
You're,
all right. Magnum, you're ahead
you're
of
not,
this, but it's still
you're
very
not
fun.
In the
where,
jungle and it, he's not Russian.
Yeah, it is fun when the husband is not dead.
I'm not dead. Aha.
And the final scene, by the way, is it's just Magnum breathing in the Kona winds.
And he goes, I guess that second storm isn't coming.
Isn't coming. Dun, dun, dun. The Kona winds in color.
Don Bellisario.
This is a film noir episode, and it's not very much fun.
No, not at all. Although I do like Higgins' rain gear. I want to give a special shout out for that, which is basically, what if you wanted to beekeep during the rain as well?
Completely different set, too. I thought that was interesting that they're in like a laundry room or something, which I think I don't recall seeing that room before, but that's where they've got the generator, and he's got his raincoats
and at one point Higgins is cutting down trees and it's like, you've gone insane, Higgins.
Yep.
Clearly
the Kona winds are giving you the tropical madness. Well, and yes, you think back to the Kona winds and you're like, I see the theme of this episode is that some people are driven to really carry. It's the theme of this episode is that the lady thought that she could get away with murder.
Yeah. And there's their TC is in one scene and Rick is in one scene, and it's just all very, it feels perfunctory.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also very much.
That's a real low key luau too. Having been to a luau, luau is not in that little room.
It's not meant for indoors. It's just like baseball inside a dome. It's not meant to be. So
you can't do that. You got to be outside.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the more I come back to Magnum and I see all these different ranges of episodes, and I've realized there are distinct eras of Magnum. You have the short shorts era, or I should say the very short shorts era. This is from the white pants era, where you're getting those Bruce Chervy episodes, you're getting those Miami Vice, you're getting those things where it's almost like they've forgotten what makes Magnum Magnum, and they're trying all these other things Maybe because it's late in the run. I don't know.
This is a Chris Abbott fish episode.
But she is usually better than this.
Yeah. Well, I want to say, like, again, I appreciate this script in that it really is an homage to film noir that is not just toying with it. They're like, let's do film noir. Right. It's just not, Magnum P.I., probably not what you want out of a Magnum P.I. episode, and that what I want is the spin. I love the idea that Magnum P.I. is a detective show about a schlubby detective who actually is the world's most attractive man. And it's set in the beaten up, run down, shabby world of a mansion in Hawaii. Right? Like, those contrasts are what make it ludicrous and fun and different. Yeah. And then you get the character interactions. And here it's more like, well, what if it wasn't that? What if it was straight up noir? And it's like, it would be a lot less fun and not really what we're here for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, as if you look at it as not a Magnum, if you look at it as straight noir, it's fine. It's fine.
It's not a bad episode, but it's not a fun episode
at
all.
It's a misjudged episode.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Magnum-Mania.com also says the garage of the gatehouse is seen for the first and only time in the show. See, I know. Oh. I knew I hadn't seen any of that before. Mm-hmm. The Kona wins. The Kona wins. They drive men mad. Or not. Like, whatever. So I want to point out Phil recommended this episode.
Yep, I sure did.
So I'd like to give our listener Blair award this week to Phil.
Yep. I'm the Blair.
And
oh, it burns. Oh, it burns so badly.
You know, they have unguents and salves for that.
Well, Phil, I know why you had us watch this episode.
Because I had tropical madness.
The Kona wins!
Because it was as if you felt somehow part of the drama.
Yeah, the wins
took you. If you want to know the truth, it was because I was perusing episode titles, saw the word Kona, and I said, that's it, I'm in!
All right.
Well, it's about coffee.
Maybe they'll be talking about the Big Island.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No.
Oops. Kona wins. Well, that wraps up this episode of Magnum Podcast. If you'd like us to name an award after you, or mock you, and or praise you for your comments, or read your letters, or anything else, again, we do have an email address.
Yeah.
And it is, again, magnum@theincomparable.com.
Join
so you can
this
do that.
Horrible running gag where rip you to shreds.
So do that. But otherwise, I think we reach the end. Until next time, when the Kona winds blow again, I've been Jason Snell, and they've been David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Bye, guys.
You know, these episodes do more than whip the sea into a frenzy. They stir the blood and tear at the emotions and... Anyway.
The Kona winds are making me so very sleepy.
The Kona winds.